This is Happiness Solved with America's happiness coach, Sandy Scarlatta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Happiness Solved. I'm so happy you're here today. So on today's episode, I am going to be speaking with Samuel Moore Sobel. He is an author, speaker, and columnist. His debut memoir, Can You See My Scars?, was released last September. This is probably one of the most powerful interviews I've ever experienced thus far, and I almost needed some tissues. So I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Samuel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. So Samuel Moore Sobel, is that your birth given name?
Yes. So my mom is Moore, my dad is Sobel. And when they got married, my mom didn't want to change her name. So that was the compromise, was have the kids be Moore-Sobel. And they kept Moore and my dad kept Sobel. So it's confused the world ever since.
Well, I kind of assumed that was the case, but my maiden name is Moore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So
I was Sandy Moore for so long.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And there's only one, like my older brother, he's never had children, so it's going to be done with us.
Wow. Maybe there's maybe we're like distant cousins somehow, you know, back in the family tree.
Yeah, who knows? I'll have to have my sister look into it. She does all the genealogy. But I know that the Moore side is mostly from Germany, and a lot of them fought in the Civil War.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of cool. And I did my ancestry DNA test. I don't have any German in me. I'm like, how does that happen? My sister, my brother, they all have German in them, but I don't. And I always used to tease my mom because I look different than my three older siblings. And I'm like, I'm the mailman's kid, aren't I? And she's like, oh, I promise you, you're not. I'm like, okay, but where did I get this nose? So Samuel, it was so exciting to see you featured in my community magazine. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And it actually led me to reach out to them and say, hey, I live in the neighborhood and I just published a book and I have a podcast. So I'm going to be featured in the magazine in May.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, it is great because it's so hard. And you reach out to all these media outlets when you're promoting your book. And I'm just another author trying to promote a book, right?
Right. Exactly.
One of many. But yeah, so I saw that and I was like, oh, this is a perfect topic. So your book is called Can You See My Scars? Ouch. Like I read that and I was like, oh, what is this about? So I will leave that up to you.
Awesome.
To share with the audience what your book's about.
Yeah. So my book starts with the story of how I got my scars. So it begins... My story begins on September 1st, 2009. It's a week before my sophomore year of high school is set to begin. And I've been completing a variety of odd jobs throughout that summer season, earning some extra spending cash. And I'm eager to get one last odd job in before the end of the season. And so this is the last job I'm going to take on before the school starts in a week from September 1. And I'm hired by a man in my community who describes the job as moving boxes and furniture from his home. My understanding of it from when we initially connected was that it was going to be moving his belongings to a nearby storage facility. When I arrived that day on September 1, the details changed from the get-go. And at the time, I chalked it up to maybe I had misunderstood, but it was kind of a common theme throughout the day of a lot of misunderstandings throughout the day. And so we go to the shed instead of going to taking everything from his home to the storage facility. We actually go to the storage facility, empty that facility, bring back all of his belongings, sort through what he wants to keep in his garage and then what he wants to take to a friend's shed. And we end up taking all of the leftovers essentially in a U-Haul truck to his friend's shed, which he says is 5 or 10 minutes down the road. as we start driving, it becomes apparent that it's over 45 minutes away, and we cross county lines. We're in the middle of nowhere. I don't recognize my surroundings. And he has to take a U-turn off of the main highway to even get to where this house is off this gravel road. And there's a house at the top of the hill, and he backs the truck all the way to the bottom of this hill where there's a shed. And we meet his friend who owns the home. She comes out, she opens the shed, and it's filled with boxes and furniture and other items. And she lets us know that we're going to have to take everything out before we're able to put the man's stuff into the shed. So the job just keeps getting bigger and longer. And it's just, you know, unfolding in a way that I didn't anticipate. So we start taking things out, and a box makes its way into my hands, and she says, toss it. And there's a cement slab that's nearby. We're just told to toss everything, and the trash will come get it in a few days. And I look down in this box, and it's books and hay. And when I say hay, it's literally straw protruding from this box. And I think this is kind of an odd assortment of items, but who am I to judge what people have in their sheds?
And exactly.
I toss the box as instructed, and the second the box hits that slab, an explosion rings out.
Holy cow. So what happened to you?
So I see this substance flying towards me, and I don't know what it is, but I just see this, you know, substance flying through the air, and I instinctively close my eyes, and I feel the substance hit my face, and just within a second or two, I mean, it was unbelievable pain. It felt like, a lot of people will ask me, what did it feel like? And it's hard to describe it other than to say it felt like somebody had lit a match and dropped it onto my face. I felt like I was on fire, and it just felt like burning alive, and I didn't know what was happening.
Wow. What was going through your head?
At first,
I know it happened really fast.
Yeah, exactly.
There's got to be something like, what?
Yeah, I was just kind of like, what's happening here? I mean, I just felt like, you know, and I'm kind of crying out, and I feel in a lot of pain. You know, initially the man grabs, we had some water bottles in the cooler, so he's grabbing those and puts a little bit of water on my face. Eventually, you know, 911 is called, and he leads me up to the top of the hill, and then they ask him on the phone, you know, what's the substance? He doesn't know. So he hands me the phone, and he goes back down the hill to go find out, and leaves me at the top of this hill, you know, with my face burning off, essentially, you know, and I'm standing there kind of at the top of this hill, and I'm looking around, and what's going through my head is, I'm going to die. Like, I didn't think I was going to live. And I just remember, you know, kind of being at the top of the hill. I'm talking to the 911 operator. She's trying to, you know, kind of provide instructions and walk me through this. I drop to my knees, and I'm just writhing in pain. I can barely keep my eyes open. I'm worried about, did it get in my eyes? You know, did I swallow it? I feel like there's a little bit of taste in my mouth. So I'm just spitting, you know, just kind of spitting out. She's giving me instructions on what to do. And yeah, it just feels completely hopeless. And I feel like this is going to be the end. And I'm 15 years old, and, you know, 6 weeks away from my 16th birthday. And all of a sudden, I come to grips with my mortality in a way that I just hadn't before.
Whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. So when did you find out what the substance was?
Yes. So the paramedics arrive, they lift me up, you know, they put me on a stretcher, they lift me up into the stretcher. I'm looking around, the property's surrounded with trees, and I'm wondering if this is the last time I'm going to see trees. As they put me into the back of the ambulance, I kind of overhear them talking, and I see somebody, you know, the authorities, they've sent a cop car as well, and the authorities are talking to the woman, and I'm gathering from them, they tell me that the woman apparently tells them that the substance was in a glass jar, that it was labeled with a piece of tape, sulfuric acid 1%. And she said that it belonged to her ex-husband, and that he used sulfuric acid for metal etching, and that's why it was stored in the way that it was stored.
Wow. So walk me through, what was that like? I mean, what were the degree of the burns on your face?
Yeah, so they were second and third degree burns to my face, and then also to my arms as well. And I still have some scars on my right arm from that experience. At the time, there was some damage to my ear as well. That's really healed miraculously. The doctors at the time were really worried about my ear and telling me that it might not heal. It did. It healed remarkably well. But those initial days, you know, I'm taken to the hospital from the beginning. I get to the hospital, they wheel me into the chemical shower. They strip me naked and I'm in this chemical shower as they're kind of washing off, you know, the substance. And that's when the relief begins, because I'm really in pain for, you know, that whole period up until I get to the chemical shower. Then I'm taken to the hospital room. From the beginning, they're telling me they're going to medevac me to Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C., who could better handle my case. So the medevac arrives. I'm medevac to Children's Hospital. And I'm there overnight. And it's just, you know, those thoughts. I mean, I'm having trouble even from that first night. It's hard for me to sleep. I'm talking to my parents. I'm kind of telling details of the day and kind of remembering things and just really in shock of what's happened. And it was that night was the first night where I really start to wonder and question. I'll never forget it, sitting upright in that bed late at night in my hospital room and thinking, is anyone ever going to love me? Am I ever going to find a woman who's going to fall in love with me because of how I look? And that was the seeds of that. That would be something I would carry with me for a very long time and affect me in ways. So that was kind of the initial thought. And then the next morning, you know, they take me in, they do a debriding surgery, and then they...
Okay, hold on. What is a debriding surgery?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So they basically, they're going in to scrape the areas, the affected areas, to prevent infection. So that's what their goal is, okay, is to make sure that you don't get infection. That's the big risk, especially in the midst of a burn, is just right, the rate of infection. And so they're in there doing that. And then they release me within 24 hours. And there was nothing left that they could do for me. And the rest was up to me. And I just remember being in the back of my parents' car driving home and just wondering, what is life going to be like? I mean, it just felt like this big question mark in my head of, am I going to be able to go back to school? Am I going to go to college? Am I going to get married? Am I going to get a job? I mean, just everything seems in flux at this point. Am I going to survive this? You know, I had one of my eyebrows was literally, I could kind of push it back and forth. It had like burned, you know, the skin underneath half off. And so I, you know, everything seemed different. And It was a really long journey, and I just really was fearful for the future.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I was just telling you, I have a son, he's in college, he's 20. So I can't even imagine him having to go through something like that, and all, or any kid for that matter. You know, I mean, that is, what a heavy weight to carry.
Yeah.
And it's something that was so out of your control and wasn't your fault.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I was trying to help people. This it was just right, such a whirlwind of like, wait, how did this happen? And I, you know, it's one of those things even now today, right? Like people will ask me, you know, why was this ferric acid there? Why is that? It's one of those things, like, I don't know. I can't tell you, even 11 years and counting, all of it. It just seems like the most random, you know, bizarre story, something out of a movie, you know. It's just, I don't know why it happened, and it's just, you know, it's just what happened.
You know, but things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you may not be at a point in your life where you fully see it, but at least you know, were able to probably get some therapy for yourself by writing the book. It was probably very therapeutic. Now, I read something in there how you related the scars to, like, everybody has scars. So how do you address that in your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, you know, the initial part of my recovery, right, is really focused on the physical scars and, you know, that physical recovery. And I'm, over the course of the next several years of my, throughout the rest of my high school and early 20s, I'm in and out of surgery. So I have more than a dozen operations, laser operations, facial reconstructive operations, skin grafts, you name it, is my experience. But as I'm doing, you know, going through that, and I realize in the first few months, you know, there's also some of those emotional scars that in some ways were affecting my life more than the physical ones. And so, you
Without
know,
question. I'm starting,
yeah. So I'm noticing, you know, some of those symptoms of irritability and anger and exhaustion and trouble getting out of bed in the morning and insomnia as well, and eventually start going to counseling, luckily pretty early on in my experience. And that was really, really foundational. And I include a lot of that in my book of just candid conversations I had with my psychiatrist, who, you know, while we're having the sessions, he kind of introduced me to this concept that I've carried with me ever since and share with audiences, because I think it's applicable to all of us. But there's this idea that he was encouraging me to work on developing the tools, the necessary tools that I needed to fulfill my toolbox, to fill my toolbox with these tools, and that I could use those tools to kind of withstand whatever came my way. And so some of those tools were journaling, regular diet and exercise, sharing my story with people I trusted, things like that. There was a whole arsenal of tools I was able to use. And it was through this experience, now that I've done the, you know, had this experience and through this journey, as I look back, I see that my story isn't just about being a burn survivor and having second and third degree burns. It's also about having emotional scars and what the fallout was from the accident. And I think that relates to all of us. We all have scars and we all have bad things happen to us, you know, whether it's a death in the family or a breakup or a divorce or, you know, death. There's just so many things that will happen to us throughout this life, and adversity is a given. And I think the question isn't so much if adversity will come our way, but what we will do to respond to it. And that's really what we have control over. And so I just see the ways in which the scars that we carry influence our lives, and we have to actively work. It's hard work to work through those scars and work through the things that have happened to us. And once we've reached that place, to use our scars and our stories to impact others for good.
Oh, so well said. And yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. You know, life happens while we're busy making other plans. I always have to shout out to Caroline, my good friend Caroline, who used to tell me that all the time. And it's true. While some days it just may be somebody cut you off in traffic, and then other days, you know, it could, like, one of those big deals. And it really is how we choose to react to the situation. But of course, you had to take the time to really just, like, go through those emotions. Of course you were going to be angry. Why the heck did this happen to me? Right? There had to be anger. And especially as a 15-year-old who isn't even emotionally fully developed yet, right? You know, I mean, you're still learning. You're still trying to figure it all out. And of course, you know, I mean, I remember my son being 15. It's like, I got a pit bull, you know? And like little things like that were like major deals, right? And so I can't even imagine, you know, so, but it's true, you know, but you know, that, you know, that's nothing compared to what you went through, obviously. But you do have to go through all of those emotions first before you're in a place where you're able to, you know, shift your perspective or figure out what you are meant to learn from it. I mean, there's a lot of healing that has to happen.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I think for me, you know, I always stress with people, I'm coming to you more than 11 years after this accident. And you know, I've had a lot of healing and I've gone to a lot of therapy and I've done a lot of that hard work to get to a place of acceptance. And I've transformed my scars from, you know, I used to view them as objects of shame, and now I see them as objects of survival. And I'm proud of my scars and I'm proud of my story, and I don't feel the need to hide them like I used to. And so, you know, I've come a long way and things have happened where my life today is now. I never could have predicted 11 years ago. But, you know, as a 15-year-old, I was asking those questions that all, I think everybody asks throughout their life, but especially as a teenager, you know, who am I and what is my purpose and how am I going to respond to this and what is my life going to look like and how do I want to live the rest of my life? And I really had to grapple with that, you know, and you're separating from your parents and you're forging your own identity. And in the middle of that, already, you know, being 15 of doing some of those things, this accident just kind of compounds that and you get another thing that's thrown your way. And so I had to sift through that too. And so I had to really come to grips with who I was in this. But in some ways, you know, and I think it speaks to kind of that acceptance. As I look back now, you know, it was in some ways, you know, I want to be careful how I phrase this because I think I don't want it to come off that I'm happy this happened to me. I will never, you know, honestly be able to say, oh, I'd go through this again in a heartbeat and I love that I have this experience. But I think, you know, I see now that the lessons I learned were invaluable and that there was good that came out of this. And so there's a whole semblance of meaning that I can draw upon. And for me now, the great benefit of life experience is looking back and saying, hey, I survived this, so I can survive whatever comes my way. You know, when you're 15, you don't have that life experience. You think everything, every temporary feeling feels like it's going to be permanent, right? And that's exactly. Just because you don't have the life experience. But now I can look back and say, hey, I overcame that accident. I can do anything. And so whatever challenges that, whether it's work or whatever it is, it always pales in comparison to that. So for me, I feel kind of emboldened to be like, oh, well, I can handle this. And it gives me that sense of confidence that I might not have had without that. And so there's certainly things that have come out of it that I value and I'm even grateful for the ways I've been able to grow and become the man I am today.
Oh my gosh, of course. And the first thing that came to my mind is that it's been 11 years. That's not a lot of time. It's really not.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've been on my journey for 30 years and I still feel like, you know, I have a lot to learn, but I love how you are careful to say that or phrase that you're not happy it happened, but you're more grateful for the experience. And I think that that's important to point out because no, anything that happens in our lives that is tragic, you never want to go through that again. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I'm just really, I just have to say as a mom to an only child who's a boy, I'm so proud of you because you could have gone in so many different directions.
Thank you. No, you're right. It could have totally, yeah, it could have gone in so many different directions. You're so right.
It could have been, I mean, you could have ended up suicidal. You could have ended up abusing drugs, alcohol. I mean, there's so many ways that you could have, different paths you could have headed down, and you didn't. So good for you.
Thank you.
And your parents have a big part in that too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I think, you know, there were times where, especially in the initially, where I did have some suicidal thoughts or, you know, I did really struggle with my mental health, but my parents are really instrumental in, I have a younger brother and a younger sister as well. And the four of them are really, and I write about it in the book. I mean, they're why I'm here today. You know, their love and their support. You know, I felt like so many other people, you know, friends, even extended family members, you know, they kind of just withdrew. This experience was, you know, they didn't know how to interact with me anymore, or, you know, they just didn't know what to say, and which I totally understand in hindsight, but it felt really lonely at the time. And it was just a really lonely road. But those four people were there for me. And so, you know, if without them, I don't know where I'd be. And so I'm eternally grateful to them and for their love and support and that they stuck with me and they stuck it out. And
of course,
you know,
they did.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have children yet.
I do not yet. No.
Okay. So you'll know what I'm talking about someday. And then when you do, you can come back to me and be like, Sandy, you're right. Like as a parent, I would jump in front of a bullet for my kid. Mm. Wouldn't even think twice about it. I mean, it's just, that's how powerful it is. So that's great. But I'm grateful for your parents too, that they were there for you to provide that support. That's really great. So back to your book, before we started the interview, we talked about maybe there was a section that you could read.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Great.
And I think this section, and I picked this one specifically just because, you know, when I have the opportunity to share about my story, there's a tendency, I think, to really just focus on, just like I was in the initial parts of this experience, the physical aspects of this, you know, and the scars themselves. But there's such a deeper meaning to them, and there's a whole emotional piece that I think your audience might really connect with. So I'll go ahead and read this really quickly here, just a short little chapter. My book is broken up into short chapters to keep the reader interested in going through it. But this chapter here is called Unearthing the Past. And everyone, I have a quote for every chapter. And this quote is, "Though he slay me, I will hope in him, yet I will argue my ways to his face." Job 13:15. One night, I laid awake in bed, staring up at the ceiling. I couldn't fall asleep. I was thinking about how hard everything felt, how hard school was, how hard it was to get through the day. I felt abandoned by many of my friends. I was desperately unhappy and in a lot of pain. I felt like no woman would ever look at me, see my face, and fall in love with me. I thought about how hard this continued to be each and every day. Pulling myself out of bed each morning had become a chore. Showering was difficult, both physically and emotionally. I hadn't been able to exercise since the accident. I couldn't even be in the sunlight without worrying about my scars. I spent hours in hospital rooms, doctor's offices, and waiting rooms. It was months after the accident, and at every turn, I heard about the need for more surgeries and medical treatments. That night, I wished I had died in the accident. It would have been easier. So many people were telling me how miraculous it was that I had survived the accident. I should have died. At the very least, I should have lost my eyesight. Instead, I scraped by, and it was a miracle, but it felt like a half shell of the life I had once lived. Death seemed like the only way out. I felt ashamed even entertaining such thoughts, yet they continued unabated. Throughout the day, I was usually able to keep my mind away from suicidal ideations, but at night, it was harder to control my tired mind. I continued to wonder whether my life had become too arduous to keep on living. Occasionally, I combated such dangerous thoughts by pacing around the lower levels of the house late at night to avoid waking up the rest of the family. On such nights, I typically sought out the last picture of me from before the accident. It had been taken in May of 2009 and was on display in the living room. It was an image of me wearing an oversized Washington Capitals t-shirt, smiling widely as I accepted an award on stage at my church. During these clandestine viewing sessions, I nearly always pulled the brown frame down from the bookshelf on which it was resting, using my hand to trace the outline of my previous face along the glass. It was also during these tense moments that I decided that suicide was not an option. It would be far too painful for my family. My life had nearly ended once already. I could not end it only a few months into my recovery. My love for the four members of my family kept me alive. I believed they were worth living for, even if I was not.
Wow. You're going to make me cry. Oh, wow. That was really incredible. Okay. Okay. I see. I don't even have any tissues here where I record. Oh, wow. Well, good for you. That's just incredible. So what else do you want to share with the listeners? We'll end on that note with your book. But I understand you're a contributing writer for some publications.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell me about those.
Yeah, so I write a column for a local newspaper here in Loudoun County. It's the Blue Ridge Leader, and I've been writing there for the last almost, it'll be 10 years this November. So I started that column back as a senior in high school, which is really cool, but had the opportunity to, I was writing an election story for the election upcoming election day, and it got cut at the last minute. And so I shopped it around to different newspapers, and they agreed to publish it, and they've been publishing my work ever since, which is awesome. So it's great to have an opportunity to write a column and be involved in the local community. And so I have the opportunity to do that. And then I also speak and share my story now that the book has come out, and just, you know, share my story with others. And I would just say to your audience, you know, I know this is a time where my story, you know, came out September 1st, 2020 was the publication date of my book, which was the 11th year anniversary of the accident. And I just think it's taken on a deeper resonance or deeper meaning during this time because of the ongoing pandemic. And so much of us are dealing with some of those same feelings that I was and that I describe in the book, of loneliness, of just really sadness. And I, so much of my experience now kind of harkens back to that, of not being able to leave the house for the first few months after the accident, and not being able to hug or touch people because I had to keep antibiotic cream on my face and had to keep distance from everyone. And so much of this time has kind of been reminiscent of that. And I just want to offer to your audience that, you know, you too can overcome, and you too can make a difference. And for those of you who are in the midst of challenging times, if you take anything from my story, I hope it's that, you know, there's a way to overcome adversity, even when you're dealt a hand that's really seems almost impossible to overcome. And I would just encourage everybody to hang in there and to dig deep and to find ways, whatever adversity you're facing, to confront that and really take the time to heal. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time to forgive. It takes time to really work through some of those mental health challenges. Go to therapy, do all of those things that are really valuable. And then I would say, once you reach that place, go share your scars with somebody. I mean, it's such a valuable thing to have people who, you know, I remember the first time I met someone who, and I talk about it in the book, who I met a fellow author who, years after the accident, he was the first person I met who had scars on his face, just like I did. And it was an amazing moment of just recognition and sharing stories. And it meant so much to me to see someone who had gone through a similar, although very different experience, but knew what it was like to be burned, but was able to overcome. And, you know, it just gave me hope in that moment. And so I hope that it does the same for everyone listening. And I would just encourage you to find ways. Maybe you don't have to do it as publicly as I do, and that's okay too. But even if it's just a friend or a family member, you know, share those scars. I think the world needs to hear your story. And I believe strongly that the world can be changed one story at a time, and it starts with you.
Oh my gosh, that is so true. One of the first episodes that I released of my podcast was with Jeffrey Berwind, and he's like a master storytelling coach. And that's what we talk about. And the episode's called Stories Give Hope. Stories Give Hope.
Yeah.
But
they do.
But yeah. Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for sharing your story. It is very powerful. And I love how you took the whole angle of the physical scars with the emotional ones. And that's a big message for so many people.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been an honor to have this out there and just to hear from people. One of the things that's been interesting to me, Sandy, has been the number of people from all stages of life who've contacted me or reached out to me and said, hey, your book really touched me. And it's just been added a whole new sense of meaning and redemption to my story. And it's helped transform this from an accident that never should have happened into something that has provided guidance or solace or hope to others. And so it's just been so meaningful to me. And I hope that it continues to impact others for good. That's the whole point of this project. And I'm just honored to be a part of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm so happy that you have the courage to share your story. Because you're right, not everybody has the courage. I'm just going to stick with that word. Not everybody has that courage. And it's not to say that people are wrong if they don't share their story, because it's totally okay. You know, you have to be okay with it, because once it's out there, it's out there. And yeah, so I don't want anybody to feel like I'm making you wrong for not sharing your story. That's okay too. But I commend people that do, because, you know, we need those stories of hope out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. It's personal preference. And some people feel called to do that and some people don't. And that's totally fine. But it's what I felt called to do, and I'll offer this up and show everyone my scars. And my book it's an account of my experience, but it's also, I'm very honest in it and very authentic. And I talk about the mistakes I made. It by no means is it a glorified account of my journey. It's, you know, it's just an authentic look at what it was like to hurt and to go through pain, and then what it was like to overcome. And today my life looks very different. You know, I did meet the love of my life and married her last August. And so all those fears I had about finding a woman to love me were unfounded, thankfully. And, you know, was able to graduate from high school on time and go to college and graduate and get a good job in the tech industry. And my wife and I own a beautiful condo, and life is really good, but it took a long time to get here. And it was a lot of work, but I'm just so grateful for all the gifts I have today, and just grateful for the life I have in the present, and grateful to be here. Every day is a gift, and every day is just a blessing, especially when you come so close to, you know, possibly being dead. I mean, the doctors, when I first got to the hospital, they were testing me to make sure that I didn't have any internal organ damage because a lot of times in these cases, you swallow just one drop and one drop can ruin your organs, and you're looking at an organ transplant. And so much could have gone different. And I'm just grateful to be here and be able to talk with you today.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to get this message out there. And you can get his book on Amazon, right? There's two different places you can purchase it. Can You See My Scars on Amazon? And then what was the other website?
You can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on through my publisher, Mascot Books.
Okay, perfect. And I'll mention that again at the end of the episode. And you also have a website.
I do. Right? My website is samuelmore-sobel.com, MORE-SOBEL.com.
Great. Thank you, Samuel. And this was such a great, great time talking with you. And thank you again for sharing your story.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks so much for having me on.
Of course. Thank you. My, oh my, goodness gracious. After I stopped recording that interview, I was cracking up laughing because I said to Samuel, I'm like, you almost had me bawling my eyes out when he was reading that chapter from his book. What a powerful message. So if you'd like to purchase his book, Can You See My Scars? Please go to amazon.com or mascotbooks.com. And you can also visit his website at samuelmore-sobel.com. So thank you for listening today. My website is sandyscarlotta.com. You can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Coach Sandy Scarlotta. My book, Happiness Solved, Climbing 100 Steps, can be found on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or my publisher, archwaypublishing.com. Thank you again for listening, and I hope that you stay healthy and happy, and that your life is filled with joy, peace, and happiness. Take care, everyone.